And welcome to Food for Thought. I am Dee Dee McGrail.
And I'm Laura Mangone. Happy day.
Happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday. How are you?
Except this is going to be, I'm trying to figure out how to make you louder. Okay, there you go. Yeah, we're taping the show on Thursday, but I think it airs on our other station on Saturday.
Actually, it's on the national station on Saturday and Sunday. And if our fabulous producer gets his stuff together, it may air on the local station starting tomorrow, or that might also be on Saturday.
But, and I think what you've been posting on our Facebook page is the Buzzsprout link.
Yes.
So people can listen whenever they want.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, so that would be more attractive to me personally than trying to tune in at a certain time.
Right. Although I do listen to the national station because it's kind of cool. You know, it's a national station, so it's more information. The ads are different. The content is different. It's more than our just, you know, our little podcast or our local station. So as mentioned last week, I'm taking a tour around the world each week. And this week I cooked some food from Morocco. I have these little world food books that I've been sort of reading a lot of. I mean, they're short little books. They're about 200 pages and they're really informative. Specifically if you're going to, it's almost like a travel book. So in addition to just the food, it tells you about, you know, the culture, about the traditions in the certain area. Obviously, you know, shopping and different markets in that area. So it's more thorough than just like a cookbook. It's, you know, people who drink and travel and eat all over the world. So this week was Morocco and I made a really delicious lamb tagine. So lamb, as you might imagine, the coastal part of Morocco and the west coast of Morocco, which is on the Atlantic, is a lot of seafood, a lot of fresh vegetables. I mean, fresh vegetables pretty much all over the country, but on the east coast, which is the Algerian side of the country, well, Algeria in the north and Mauritania in the south. Like, I'm learning all these geographical things. Like, did you know Mauritania was right next to Morocco? I didn't.
Yes.
So obviously in the, you know, the areas that are landlocked, they use a lot more meats as opposed to seafood. They, their vegetables are vegetables that are hardier, that withstand colder temperatures, a lot of legumes. And, you know, one of the biggest meats that they eat in Morocco is lamb. Lots and lots and lots of lamb everywhere. They're roaming the hills. They're up in the high country. They're even by the beaches. So I made a pretty traditional lamb tagine. It smelled delicious in my house yesterday. And it's basically like any other kind of meat stew. You sear the meat. I seasoned it just with a little bit of cardamom and cumin and saffron. And I used saffron dust. So I just sprinkled a little bit of saffron dust on it.
Now, did you order, you have saffron dust or did you make saffron dust?
I have saffron and I just ground it up a little bit in my mortar and pestle.
Okay.
So I don't have dust, but I just have, you know, regular saffron threads. And you sear it just like you would start any other.
Did you flour it?
I did not flour it. Just had a little bit of the herbs on it. And I seared it in half oil, half butter until it was nicely browned. And they were nice big pieces. It was not like small pieces. I bought a boneless leg and, you know, cut it up. So they were nice, like 1.5 to 2 inch chunks.
Right.
Nice large pieces. And I browned them nicely, took them out. And then I just sauteed some sliced onions. And I threw in some carrots And it basically is pretty much like any other stew that you would make, with the exception of all of the herbs and spices that you put in, because it was heavily, heavily spiced. It had, in addition to what I already mentioned, the saffron dust and the cardamom, it had turmeric, it had coriander, it had nutmeg, cloves, black pepper, and then I had some herbs. So at first, the onion goes in, then I put in some garlic and ginger. Then I put in all of those spices that I just mentioned, and you sort of like cook them a bit. You know, you bring out the flavor in them when you're roasting them.
Right.
Then this is where it got really interesting, and I wasn't sure that Mario was going to be a fan of it, because Mario really doesn't like sweet. And you remember a couple of weeks ago, we had a conversation about meat, like savory, but with fruits in it.
Right.
Lots and lots of dried apricots.
In the stew?
In the stew. So far, the only thing in there is the herbs, the onions, garlic, and ginger. I put the carrots in, and then I put in diced apricots,
mm-hmm.
and raisins.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put the meat back in and just covered it. You could use beef broth. I just used some chicken broth, which is customary, it seems like, in most of the recipes, even though it was lamb. They didn't even use lamb broth or beef broth. It was just chicken broth.
Sometimes I prefer that with a dish like that. It just kind of, the beef broth is so sort of dense.
It's
and
a lot.
Rich.
Yeah, it's
strong.
Really,
you know, the chicken broth is a little milder. You can even use a vegetable stock if you want.
Absolutely could. So then I cooked that for about an hour. Then I put in some small potatoes, very small potatoes.
Babies,
but I even cut them a little bit smaller. I didn't want it to be heavily potato week like you. I sort of back away from the starches and certain things, so I wanted it to be more carrots and beet and lamb, as opposed to the quantity of potatoes that they were doing in the recipe in this book. And then I cooked it for about another half an hour, and it sort of reduced a bit, and because of the apricots and the raisins, it got sort of a nice glaze to it. You know, the pectin and those fruits made it sort of glazed. And then when it was finished, I folded in about a cup and a half, like pretty heavy, slivered almonds.
Nice.
Yeah, it was really delicious.
Were they toasted?
They were toasted. Yep. They were supposed to be slivered. They were sort of roughly chopped, and I toasted them and I folded them in. But the combination of the savory meat and the sweetness from the raisins and the apricots and the crunch from the almonds was really, really delicious.
Right.
Yeah. And I made couscous, which again in Morocco is pretty much their staple. You know, they have couscous with everything.
Yeah.
Yep. And I made some couscous, and I just did it pretty much like I would do a rice peel off. I had some onion in it, and I put some wild mushrooms in it, which is in one of their, on the East Coast, closer to Algeria, lots and lots of mushroom farms. So they have a ton of different beautiful mushrooms. So I put mushrooms and onions, and then I just threw the couscous in. I had that also in some chicken broth. And that, together with the lamb, it was delicious. And my house smelled like Morocco yesterday.
Now, how did Mario feel about it? Because I have clients who have spoken about their aversion to anything sweet with meat. I don't have it. I don't like to do carbs, but I like, for example, like a spicy mango salsa and a piece of flank steak, or you know, fruit, like a chicken marbella with prunes and olives. But so I think I would almost prefer the sweet of those things, the apricots and the raisins or currants, if you want to use it, and the nuts. And I could get rid of the potatoes for me entirely and just have the veggies in there.
I mean, I thought it was delicious. I thought it was the perfect combination. And as I said, I did not put as many potatoes in it as I probably should have. So that would have sucked up a little bit more of the sauce.
And it would also thicken it a little bit.
Yes, it would have concentrated the flavors a little bit more, but it was perfect. It was not overly sweet, but you definitely felt the sweetness.
How did Mario like it?
It was pretty lamb forward. You know, it was pretty lamby.
How did Mario like to tolerate the sweet stuff?
He liked it. He understood that it was a traditional dish that I was making, and that is the way it was supposed to be prepared. But on the whole, he's not a fan either of a little bit of, you know, the sweetness.
I wouldn't want it all the time. Once in a while, I think it's nice. It's a nice accompaniment, and especially if you want to make something spicy, like a stew like that, if it... You want to go a little spicy, the sweet will balance the
spice.
Absolutely.
Yeah. This actually, the Moroccan cuisine does not have, it has a lot of herbs, a lot of spices, but not a lot of heat. You know, throughout this whole culinary journey I took in this book, it's really, although they sell quite a lot of spices, you know, all of the markets are spice laden, and they're, you know, beautifully, you know, the way they do their presentations of spices in the spice markets is crazy. They're just mounded up. But no, not a lot of heat. So it was really lovely. And we did not, as traditional, you know, traditionally, if you were in Morocco, you would be eating with your fingers. They don't use utensils.
Right.
You only use your first, and this is interesting, I wasn't aware of this. You're only supposed to use your right hand. It's actually...
Why?
It's just an etiquette. It tells you all about the etiquette. You're only supposed to use your right hand.
What if you're left-handed?
I don't know, but traditionally, as according to my cultural guide here... Okay. Only with your right hand and only with your first, your index finger, your middle finger, and your thumb. And that's it. Like, it's completely rude if you were to, like, go in five-fingered, you know. Even, it's interesting, they had a conversation, they had a section of etiquette because, you know, you're learning about a different culture and how they serve things and what you would be expected if you were invited to a Moroccan's home, you know, what the cultural ramifications of that is. Like, if you're offered something, you should always take something, even if it's just a small taste. Like, it would be an insult if you were to refuse it. And it was pretty interesting. Some of the very funny, but apparently it takes a few tries, but Moroccans even can eat couscous. What they traditionally do, or customarily do, is they'll ball up. The couscous has enough moisture in it that you can, with those three fingers, you can ball it up into like a little ball and then eat it.
Well, it depends how it comes out when it's cooked. Like, I've had couscous that kind of sticks together and it'd be
well, that's good. That's how it should be, so that you can do that. Like, you would never get loose, falling apart couscous in Morocco because
really
that's not how they eat it. Right. They need to eat it with their fingers. So it needs to be a little, you know, like Chinese rice, you know, it's always a little bit sticky so that they can pick it up with chopsticks.
Yeah. But are people in Morocco today eating with their hands? Even with COVID?
Yes. Yeah, well, I don't know about this. Yeah, I would think so. They clean. It's a very big process of washing your hands before the meal. It's almost a rite, and it's a part of the eating process. When you sit down at the table, there's a bowl to wash your hands, and lemon, and a towel, and it's customary. There is a funny story in here about Henry Kissinger when he was visiting Morocco. And he, I'm sorry, not Henry Kissinger. Winston Churchill.
Okay.
And he was presented this bowl, and not only did he just, traditionally what you're supposed to do is you're just supposed to wash your fingertips of your hands, not like get palm deep in there. But he apparently got palm deep, and then he saw how everyone else was doing it. And then at the end of the meal, because you do the same thing, it's like part of the ceremony of eating. At the end of the meal, you're presented with another bowl because you wash your fingers again after the meal. And at that point, he got the hint, and he wasn't going to be palm deep in it. But they thought it was a huge insult that he washed his whole hands and not just his fingertips. It's really interesting. Very interesting.
Now, what would you do? This has been a question now. I almost feel guilty. You know, I'm working for a vegan family right now.
Right.
And so one of the segments we're going to be talking about after this, I'm not sure if it's immediately after or the third segment, but I have some vegan discoveries. I've always wondered, you know, in terms of, you know, when you bring up lamb, I see you bring up lamb in a stew, what would be a good substitute for that? I mean, you could say beans for protein, but I wish there was like a vegan, almost like a meat substitute that was
portobello mushrooms can be extremely meaty. I would do big giant chunks of portobello mushrooms
or tempeh.
I don't really like tempeh. I don't like the texture of tempeh. Tofu. I mean, I think firm tofu, if you, you know, season it, and we can talk about this when we come back because we're running out of time, but you know, I think extra firm tofu, if you drain it and season it properly and bake it, is just as tough as a piece of meat, or can be. I think it's just as delicious.
Okay, right, we're out of time.
On that note, we'll be right back.
Attention Medicare recipients and anyone turning 65. Medicare has approved new benefits not included with original Medicare and older Medicare Advantage plans. You may not be getting all of the benefits you're entitled to, including in-home aids, telephone appointments with your doctors, home-delivered meals and prescriptions. These benefits may be available and it's a free call to enroll. The new plans may also offer free eyeglasses, free hearing aids, free wellness visits, and gym memberships. Call the Medicare benefits line now. It's easy. Call 800-663-7292. 800-663-7292. Find out if you're eligible for new benefits like meal and prescription delivery, in-home aids, and telemedicine. Some plans may have a $0 monthly premium or zero copays for big out-of-pocket savings. Not all Medicare Advantage plans are alike. The new plans have more benefits for many people. Call 800-663-7292. 800-663-7292. 800-663-7292.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Are you over the age of 60 and been diagnosed with lung cancer? If so, you and your family may qualify for a cash award. Our experienced attorneys are standing by to evaluate whether you have a lung cancer claim that qualifies you for a cash award. The consultation is absolutely free, and there is no risk and no money out of pocket. We only receive a fee when we secure you and your family a settlement. 250,000 people are diagnosed with lung cancer every year. You're not alone in this battle. We can help make sure that you and your family are financially safe and that medical expenses are covered. Again, if you've been diagnosed with lung cancer and are over age 60, call now. Don't delay. There are deadlines for filing claims. We're standing by 24/7. Call us at 1-855-398-1754. 1-855-398-1754. That's 1-855-398-1754. Attorney Advertising. William Stephacker Jr. is the attorney responsible for this ad. Main office, Granton, Pennsylvania. May not be available in all states.
I can't get my computer to work.
Let me help you with that.
How'd you do that?
I just got techie with Geeks On Site.
Our geeks literally come on site. No need to stop what you're doing or block off time. We come to your home, office, or wherever you are. And we don't just fix whatever computer issues you might be having. We explain and teach you along the way so you can feel empowered and then help others at home or in your office. Better yet, don't have time for tech support to come to you? Let us remote into your desktop or laptop, and one of our geeks will instantly walk you through. We offer affordable prices on our remote services and IT support. You and those in your office will never have to wait hours to have your technical questions answered. Get your free computer diagnosis today with your very own geek.
Get started now and we'll help you instantly. Call 844-606-8411. 844-606-8411. That's 844-606-8411.
Okay, welcome back.
Okay, we're back.
So we were talking about vegetarian.
Yeah, before we go
substitutions.
Before we go vegan, I'm not sure if it was the first time I've ever had it, and not to gross out our vegans too much with all of this talk of meat before I go into vegan, but I got takeout in an Indian restaurant near place my new place. Mm-hmm. It was actually a pretty extensive menu, and I thought, wow, maybe this will be good. I had goat for the first time.
I love goat.
Tastes like lamb. I wasn't.
It's exactly like lamb.
It wasn't too strong at all.
No, it's delicious. I love it. I love whenever I'm on a Caribbean island. I love curried goat. It's like one of my go-to dishes. Almost literally the first night I'm anywhere in the Caribbean, I have curried goat. I love it. So good. Did you like it?
Loved it.
How was it prepared?
It was I think it was a curry. Mm-hmm. And then we had seafood, vindaloo.
Right.
And
good.
It was pretty excellent. It was
so that's good. Do you have a new Indian restaurant near you?
It's not new. I think it's been there for a while.
But I mean new for you.
Oh, new. Yeah, it's our discovery, and it's local, and the two meals cost us about $35, so it was affordable.
Good.
Again, for a stew, if I were the substitution, again, I think frying the tofu gives it a consistency like you're cutting into something.
Frying it will, but also I pretty often during quarantine was making tofu at least once a week. And what I was doing is I would get extra firm and I would cut it into not quite matchsticks, but maybe half inch, like julienne almost, and tossing it with sesame oil and soy sauce and ginger and garlic. And then I would spread it out in one layer on a sheet pan. And at a pretty high heat, which I know is not usually me. I'm usually miss 375.
But like
at 400, I think maybe even a little higher than that, I put it in. And in about 15 minutes, I, you know, flipped them all over. And they got really nice and crisp. And,
right.
And I served it over like an Asian vegetable mix, and it was really good. And it just the texture of it changes when you bake it for that long, and it gets a little crispy. It's extremely meat-like.
Right.
And I totally feel like portobello mushrooms you could use in like beef stew, big chunks of portobello mushrooms, because the way they absorb whatever your braising liquid is, they take on that meat-like consistency. I think that's a perfect substitution.
Right. So I've been looking more into vegan food because I have a client now. I'm actually working as their nanny and not mm-hmm. doing a lot of cooking. But the parents are completely vegan. So I had the best vegan butter I've ever had. And it tastes like European butter.
Huh.
Like it's that good.
Wow.
And it's the brand is called Miyoko's, Miyoko.
Okay.
And Miyoko's, according to my client, is a really good vegan brand, particularly for cheeses, for dairy products. And this butter, I'm telling you, it tastes like European butter.
Wow.
And not only, it's like better than regular butter.
Like New Zealand butter, that delicious creamy.
Yeah. Irish butter, whatever, yeah. You know, it's good enough. It's of course it's a lot more expensive, but, I think it's worth it. And the base, a lot of vegan products I've noticed mm-hmm. or not noticed, but have been told about, that they, just because they're vegan doesn't mean there's necessarily all these great ingredients that go into the process. You know, they might have canola oil, which I'm staying away from completely, vegetable right. oil. The butter that Mayoko's puts out is made from coconut oil.
Oh, and the flavor, did it taste coconutty at all?
No, it was whatever the refined or unrefined, whichever the one is, it doesn't taste like coconut.
Right.
So it's just pure fat that doesn't taste like coconut.
And was the calorie, like what's the...
It's the same as much? Butter. Huh. But so you're not only getting rid of the dairy when you use this butter, but you're getting a healthy oil. That's why I'm using the vegan Hellmann's, because okay. instead of, it was the only mayonnaise that I can find, vegan or not, that was made with safflower oil as opposed to soybean oil or any of the others. So Hellmann's vegan mayonnaise was, there's the brand, Cultivated Butter by Mayoko's.
I'm going to put that on our post so our listeners can find it if they want.
Yeah, it's really excellent. You will not miss butter ever again.
That's really, really good to know.
And I'd like to try their cheeses because apparently, according to my clients, the mozzarella is amazing. My clients do not like the Parmesan. They think it's awful, but they know people that think it's great. They do feta and they do goat cheeses that are, you know, not non-animal based. They're all plant based.
Right.
And apparently they're really good. So I'm going to try to buy some of Mayoko's products and see.
And can you buy them?
Well, I know you can get them at Whole Foods.
Okay.
And I'm not sure if your average ShopRite carries it. I kind of doubt it, but probably depending on where you live and which ShopRite they are in store, you know, other stores. But so I definitely want to try that because I wouldn't mind. It's not a moral basis in terms of eliminating animal products for me. It's about incorporating a healthier fat.
Right. Good.
And, you know, some of the bad oils.
That's something to try out.
And another brand that they told me about that I did not know about is called VioLife. VioLife.
Okay, and what do they sell?
Well, they do, I can't remember what products they do, but,
My gosh, I can't believe it. So they sell something that I just ate.
What?
Moon cheese. I was just in we were somewhere with Starbucks or something, and I was starving, and VioLife sells moon cheese, and it's really good. They're like, it's like almost like cheese puffs, but it's vegan. It has no cheese in it. It's, I think if I remember correctly, cause I did read the ingredients, it was mostly sort of rice starches. Mm-hmm. So like, brown rice flour, and I think there was another, maybe tapioca.
Right.
But it was really delicious. It was very good. So that's one of the things that they sell. Nice.
And one of the things that I've decided, you know, because I tried to Google vegan cooking, vegan cuisine. And so what comes up on page one, unfortunately, we're slave to page one and two, because those are the people that are paying for advertising or they organically got there.
Right.
But to try to remember when we went to Sprig and Vine, which is one of the best vegan restaurants around. It's in New Hope, PA. It's awesome.
Yep.
Even if you're a meat eater like both of us are, you're not going to miss the meat. The flavors.
Not at all. The flavors and the combinations of how, do you remember how interesting when she was telling us about the nut mixes that they use?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my next point, is one of the basics for vegan cooking, and this is going beyond just, you know, choosing vegetables and not using dairy.
Animal products, right.
That thing is cashew cream.
Mm-hmm.
And cashew cream is how, it's sort of the base for sauces, like you can make a fettuccine Alfredo with it, you could make a sauce for fish if you want, but Cashew butters is not cashew butter. Cashew cream is made from raw cashews that are soaked overnight in water.
Okay.
And then you pulverize them like crazy until creamy. And I think there's like, oh, I just hit a lantern fly. It's some water and some, I think, some kind of vegetable stock. And what you come up with is this kind of whipped creamy stuff.
That you would use
in place of cream. You would use in place of, you know, any kind of cream base. And it gives a thickness, which is, you know, what you're after with a lot of those products. And that's something that very easily we could do and just keep in the refrigerator. Even they say it freezes and it breaks it a little bit, but you can bring it back with a whisk.
Oh, good.
So cashew cream is something that I'm putting on my list of something to make this weekend. And then I've started to get into what's the best vegan cookbook. You know, there's a million of them on the market, right?
Right.
And a lot of them are so simplistic in terms of, okay, you know, vegetables, no dairy.
Back in the day, the vegetarian epicure was the go-to. And I believe it's vegan, not just vegetarian.
There was a book called
I know one other, my sister, because my sister's been a vegetarian for 60 years or 50 years. Laurel's Kitchen is a huge, really delicious. I know it's vegetarian. I'm assuming it's vegan. I'd have to go back and look, but that was the book back in the day. It was like the Bible, the vegetarian Bible.
There was a book called The Simply Vegan Cookbook, which seemed to have a lot of basics. And then there was a book that started with the word, I guess if you were to Google vegan cookbooks and then start with the word crossroads. And this book that started with the word crossroads seemed to have like recipes that you would get at a high-end vegan restaurant. So something beyond just, you know, roasting vegetables and tossing it with and whatnot. And that's what I'd like to get into. There's an online vegan sort of certification culinary course that you can pay for via Vegan Gastronomy. And it's like a $400 course, and it's supposed to take you about a year to complete all of the segments. Of course, that's going to depend on how much time you put into it each week. But if I were to
be, and then you're certified a vegan chef.
Then you're certified vegan chef, which, you know, I like learning more about this. I'm never going to stop eating meat. You know, I just really enjoy it. I don't mind the concept of eliminating some of it.
Absolutely. I mean, Mario and I only eat, I mean, granted we eat chicken as well and fish, but we don't eat, you know, we eat mostly non-meat dishes 5 out of 7 days of the week.
And when you say that, are you substituting with fish? Because I could do that for most of the week.
No, I mean completely, you know, no protein, no meat, fish, chicken, just vegetarian.
So you eat vegetarian 5 days out of seven?
Pretty much, yeah. Just okay, by choice, great. Whether it's, you know, we're having a pasta dish or I'm making a bean dish or I'm having, like I just talked about, the tofu with veggies or a salad and a soup. Yeah, we pretty much do. Not that we don't love meat because we do eat meat, but I think it's
great.
And I think, you know what? The way we're moving forward with our resources in the world, I don't think it's a bad idea.
Not bad for the planet.
Yeah, it's not.
Not bad for the planet, you know, and you can satisfy your taste buds and not really miss the meat so much. I'm a big, you know, I probably would eat 6 days out of seven. Mm-hmm. I would eat fish.
Yeah.
I would eat fish very easily. I don't want to become a pescatarian, however you pronounce it, because I don't know. I like, sometimes I like to have a roast chicken, but it doesn't have to be every day, you know?
So one of our favorite pasta dishes that I make that has zero meat is I slice up zucchini, I slice up a couple of onions, and I saute, almost caramelize the onion.
Right.
And then I put the zucchini in and let that really cook down a bit. And while that's cooking, I'm sorry, I throw a little garlic in there too. While that's cooking, cooking pasta, whether it's, you know, quote unquote macaroni or a long pasta or gnocchi. And when the pasta is done, I toss it into that zucchini and onion mixture with a ton of Parmesan cheese. Oh my gosh, it's delicious. And the magic, you know, the starchy liquid from the pasta, and it's creamy and delicious and no meat.
Okay.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites.
Cool. So we are running out of time. I'm not sure what we're going to discuss, what we're going to talk next segment, but
Well, I have something I want to propose to you because I overheard a conversation today, which I will tell you more about when we come back. So I have one thing to discuss with you. I have an interesting question for you. It's based on a news report that I recently heard.
Okay.
So, yep. We're almost out of time, so when we come back, we'll start off with that.
Okay.
All right.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Generic Sildenafil allows you to save up to $650 on Viagra. Why pay name brand prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get the same results for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 50 generic Sildenafil pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $750 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill for the name brand again. Get generic Sildenafil for less than $3 a pill. Call 800-590-0443 today and save up to $650 and get 50 pills for just $99. Generic Sildenafil is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting to take your call now. Call 800-590-0443. That's 800-590-0443. Again, 800-590-0443.
Attention Medicare recipients and anyone turning 65. Medicare has approved new benefits not included with original Medicare and older Medicare Advantage plans. You may not be getting all of the benefits you're entitled to, including in-home aids, telephone appointments with your doctors, home-delivered meals and prescriptions. These benefits may be available and it's a free call to enroll. The new plans may also offer free eyeglasses, free hearing aids, free wellness visits, and gym memberships. Call the Medicare benefits line now. It's easy. Call 800-663-7292. 800-663-7292. Find out if you're eligible for new benefits like meal and prescription delivery, in-home aids, and telemedicine. Some plans may have a $0 monthly premium or zero copays for big out-of-pocket savings. Not all Medicare Advantage plans are alike. The new plans have more benefits for many people. Call 800-663-7292. 800-663-7292. 800-663-7292.
And we're back.
We're back to Food for Thought. So what's your...
How do you feel about black licorice?
Hate it!
I hate it too.
Hate it.
So listen to this little interesting fact. A Massachusetts man, 54 years old, died from eating too much black licorice.
Ha ha!
So,
no shiitake.
I'm guessing he was maybe had problems prior to this, but black licorice has glycyrrhizic acid. And eating as little as 2 ounces of black licorice a day, just, you know, 2 ounces is nothing. How many sticks of licorice would that, 2 ounces would probably be like 3 sticks of licorice.
I was going to say 3 sticks.
It can cause heart rhythm problems.
Wow.
So he caused his heart to stop because of eating black licorice, which prompts the question, is there any food? I think this is very interesting. I'm stealing this content, by the way, from New Jersey 101.5 because they were talking about it today.
Yeah, whatever.
Whatever. Never the twain shall meet. Is there any food that you would eat knowing, A, that it could kill you?
No.
Or what food would you eat even though, you know, you're stuffed, but you can't stop yourself from eating more? It was very interesting listening to the comments today.
You're stuffed, but you have to keep eating it.
You just can't stop. Like a lot of people were saying pizza. Like you just can't.
You can't control
themselves in eating
garlic
pizza.
Bread. Chocolate chip cookies.
Like you would just, even though like you were full and you didn't
have another bite.
You would just more.
Need it. Fried calamari. It's always like, I always finish it, you know, but if there were more.
If we're
brought out another plate, I'd freaking eat it.
Unending supply of whatever food
I
wanted.
Keep eating. Now you brought up an interesting concept because something is natural.
Right.
Doesn't mean that you cannot have too much of it.
Of course.
I mean, there's spices that you can't have too much of. Turmeric is really good for you, but don't overdo it. Cinnamon. You can go into kidney failure by eating too much bok choy. Did you know that?
I knew that. Yep.
So, you know, it's like, yeah, would I knowingly eat something that I know if I have in excess is going to kill me? No.
Right. So but, when I worked at the Alchemist and Barrister, Nikki, who was the owner's brother and the office manager, I worked with him in the accounting department at the A&B restaurant in Princeton. He used to have a t-shirt that said something about fugu. So fugu is that Japanese jellyfish that's poisonous.
Oh, yeah.
So it has to be prepared in such a way. Like there's literally, like if you get a bit of this toxin, you're like dead.
Yeah,
They have fugu chefs that are like, you know, have gone through training to make sure that they dissect it in a certain way that they don't. It's almost like living on the edge, though.
Do you remember the episode from Sex and the City when Miranda doesn't want to do something sexually and she says, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that, Laura.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not doing that.
I don't care how trained you are. I don't care how many stars, your certifications. What is the other thing? Like, isn't blowfish, is there a thing?
Oh, you know what? That's what it is. I'm sorry. It's not a jellyfish. It's a blowfish.
Blowfish.
That's what it is.
No. Blowfish, no way.
Japanese fugu is, yes, with a toxin in its intestines that if they don't get every speck of it out, you're dead. So that I could eat and just keep eating if it was an unending supply, even though I was full, I would still want to eat more and more.
What?
Fried chicken.
Ew!
I can't resist fried chicken. I kind of love fried chicken.
Ew.
You know what it stems from? It's totally a memory thing for me. So once in a while when my mom was working late, my dad would go to Chicken Holiday and get chicken from Chicken Holiday. And it was so delicious. There's still, I think, Chicken Holidays in the area. It was so good. And I love it.
Well, you just made me think of another thing, another reason why I can't just not ever eat meat again, because one of the things that I could keep nibbling at, even when I'm full, a roast chicken, not necessarily the meat, because I'll get sick of that.
The skin?
The skin and the fat. Sorry. I know it's gross.
Sorry, not sorry.
Sorry, not sorry, but I love it. Like, there's something about And the broth that you get, you know, that concentrated stuff that you get after mm-hmm. you roast a chicken. Like, I could take the meat and throw it away or put it in the refrigerator. But that stuff in the bottom of the pan, man.
So when we roast, at Chambers Walk, our turkey breasts, or we roast them ourselves. They're real turkey breasts. And in the bottom of we do them on racks. And in the bottom of that sheet pan, give me a piece of bread and I sop all that up.
Bread, I'll drink it.
And at around, getting towards Thanksgiving, when we know we're going to have a ton of orders, we're going to be doing a lot of turkeys and we're making lots of gravy, you know, gallons and gallons and gallons of gravy. We save all those drippings and we have a big tub in the freezer.
Oh, as that you should.
Is, you know, like literally like five-gallon tub, just the drippings from the roasted turkeys. Sometimes I would go in there and I'd take, it's frozen. I would go in and I would heat a spoon on the top of the stove.
Oh my God.
And I would go in with the metal spoon and make like an ice cream scoop with the spoon in the turkey drippings. And
turkey then dripping sorbet.
Yes, basically. And then I put it in the microwave and zap it, you know, defrost it and heat it and just dip bread in it. And that was like lunch.
Well, you're a disgusting person.
I know. It's so delicious, though. You would do the same. It's delicious. So isn't that interesting? Black licorice. Who knew? So beware, listeners. Don't overdo it on the...
Don't eat too much black licorice.
But even... 2 ounces, can you imagine? 2 ounces
a day over time,
but like over a week, not like a year, just like in a week's time, can affect your heart rhythm. Isn't that crazy?
Any licorice, sometimes aniseed will be introduced to a dish, and I can kind of tolerate that, but I need it to be, what is it called when you in French we call it un peu, just a little bit.
Yeah,
just a little, and you don't even notice that it's anise flavored. It gives it an unusual flavor that you can't put your finger on. But anything too licorice, like black jelly beans,
never liked them. Although, on the other hand, I like onich, and I like sambuca.
Yes,
I mean onich is much different. So
what is onich?
Onich is basically honest liqueur. It's like Sambuca. I mean, Sambuca is a trade name. It's the name of the company.
Right.
And it's anisette. But Onich, which I know they have, it's pretty much like grappa. It's like almost grain alcohol. But it has the licorice flavor to it, but no sweetness.
That I could do.
So when Mario and I got married.
I think it's the sweet.
Or actually, when Mario and I got engaged, I don't know if it was an Italian custom or what, but we literally, like almost every person that came to like wish us well, wherever we saw someone, we got a bottle of Onich. We literally had like 2 cases of this Italian Onich all over our house.
How do you spell it? Because I would like to.
A-N-I-C-E. And it's good. It's good. It's just, it's basically like Sambuca, but no sweetness, and it's not thick. It's not sugary. Like, you know, how Sambuca has that thickness to it.
I'm really intrigued by this because I'll bet you that, like, just how I told you that I can handle anise seed. Mm-hmm. I don't want a lot of it, mm-hmm. but I think it's that once the sugar is introduced,
right?
I can have the occasional Sambuca because it's got a kick. But I would love a Sambuca that had no sugar or low sugar.
Well, you will love this then because it's really good. I actually put it, even to this day, if I make biscotti, I put a splash of that in it. So I get a little bit of the anise flavor in it.
Yeah, without the sugar. I would love that.
I will, you know what? I probably have about 6 bottles. I'll give you one. We have a lot of it. It's like a very traditional, it's what Italians put in their coffee. They don't put Sambuca, they put Onich.
Really? I'm almost Italian, and I've never had Onich.
It's very delicious. I think the reason I don't like Sambuca more than the sweetness of it is that consistency.
It's syrupy.
It's like drinking syrup.
Now, do you like Grand Marnier?
I'm not a fan. Nope. Never have been. I mean, I like orange Cointreau? Flavor, but Cointreau. I like Cointreau.
And it's a little less syrupy.
Syrupy,
but
yeah.
It's still sort of. I would almost love a liqueur, and we could start our own line.
Right.
We want to do.
Okay, here's invention number 65 for us.
Would be cordials that have a very low sugar content. Not necessarily because I'm, you know, when I have a dinner party and we have some Grand Marnier, I'm not worried about my carbs anymore. You know, that's like an indulgent thing.
Right.
But sometimes I would love a cordial that was just a little drier, that just didn't have that super sweet, you know, just had the essence, almost plus, like a flavor seltzer.
Yeah, plus you get the nice flavor of whatever the herb is, you know? It's not overpowered.
Exactly.
By
it's not all about the sugar. It's about the flavor of the herb.
All right, there you go. Naturally, we're going to do extracted herbal
cordials.
Cordials.
We just have to get the liquor license. That should be easy.
Oh, yeah. Really easy. So on that note, we've been open. The restaurant's been open. Inside seating.
What's the percentage?
25%. So we can have up to 18 people in the restaurant.
How's it going?
It's going okay. Although the weather has been really beautiful, so we have more people wanting to sit outside because, you know, the heat is gone, the humidity's gone, the nights have been lovely.
Right.
So a lot of people are still sitting outside, obviously not if it's raining, but still sitting outside, still doing a pretty great amount of takeout. I mean, it's kind of amazing. I would love to speak to some other people in the restaurant industry. I know that my circle of friends who own a lot of restaurants in and around Princeton and a couple in New York, in Yonkers, in Hastings on Hudson, a lot of our culinary friends have spoken, you know, to one another about what their experience has been. And our takeout business is really rocking right now. It's really good. It's very interesting.
Well, it's, you know, I think in the beginning when COVID first happened, there were a lot of people that were just not doing takeout at all. Like they couldn't even handle. But I think over time we've realized that the likelihood of transmission with food
through
handling
a product and through a product slim. Or handling a packaging
is very slim. So people are realizing, hey, if we've got jobs and we've got income, let's get takeout as much as we possibly can.
Yeah,
and I think that's a trend that will continue as long as the economy stays okay.
It really is going pretty well. You should knock on wood because it's been great. So we do have some people that are, you know, dining inside, and we have everything extremely spaced. It's almost the way we have the dining room laid out. It's almost less than 25% because we want to keep that nice spacing between tables.
Yeah.
But it's been working really well. People are very happy. I mean, a lot of our regular customers are like, oh my gosh, we missed you. You know, it's so nice to hear the stories that everybody's doing well and everyone missed everyone. You know, it's nice to see our regular customers back.
Now, I don't know if I shared this with you on the last show or the show before, but we went to the closest sort of like city town to my new place is Easton, Pennsylvania,
where both my brothers live.
Yes, and it's really cool, and I really didn't realize how many great restaurants there were. And of course, the town has fully embraced outdoor dining, so they've they've shaved off part of the streets, and they all have tenting and outdoor seating. So we went around town. We were so excited to be out, and people walking around. Some had masks, some didn't, but. You know, we didn't feel it was too crowded in terms of walking around. We tried to get a table. We probably went to 8 restaurants. There was no tables outside. Now, they were allowed to have indoor dining at 25%. Nobody was doing it. And it wasn't just because it was nice out. I think people were like, as long as we can be outside, we're going to be outside.
I agree. I think that's the consensus, and it makes sense. I mean, you know, we're heading into cold weather and you're going to have to be inside. So why not take advantage?
It's like as we move forward, it gets into colder weather and you have like Chambers Walk has 25% capacity, you're gonna, I think you should take reservations and charge a shit ton of money because,
right?
But you know what I mean? Just
right.
You know, let people get takeout. Let the people who really want to go out, really want to sit inside, come in. But you're gonna pay a premium.
That's right. It. Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll and see how. We'll see how it all unfolds. And I should tell you, there's a couple of really great restaurants in Easton. I should get the list from my sister-in-law who's lived there for almost 40 years. One specific is Ocean. We've been there many times. It's really, really good. Great right. seafood restaurant. All right, my dear, we are running out of time. Next week on Food for Thought, I'm not sure. It'll be from some other area in the world. I'm going to do some cooking.
And what I would like to propose to you on air is that we do another on location show.
Absolutely.
Starting soon because we can be one of the only tables in there.
Yes.
And it will be safe.
I'm on it.
All right.
Okay. See you next time.
Thanks for listening.